Well, I've just been looking at a fascinating scrapbook of newspaper cuttings and letters that I want to tell you about right now, because Namir Karim, am I saying that right, Namir?
Sorry.
Namir Karim is originally from Iraq, where he served in the army under Saddam Hussein, but he has a very strong Kerry connection that we're going to tell you about now. Your story is intriguing. I'm dying to talk to you, Namir, so thanks for coming to see us this morning.
Thanks, Ray.
In 1991, before the invasion of Kuwait by Iraq, what were you doing and where were you living?
I was living in Baghdad at that time, and I was in the army, and the invasion was in 1990, March 91.
Yeah.
And I was that time I was in Baghdad, and the building I was working is a very sensitive building. It was the building construction of the army, and it was in the main just near the Ministry of Defense of Iraqi Ministry of Defense, and that time it was we know it's the American warned Iraqis that they're going to, if Saddam Hussein don't show his weapon of mass destruction or something like that,
yeah,
they're going to attack the country by the 31st of the last day in February it was.
Yeah.
And we all we knew that's going to happen, and you have to donate a pint of blood to get a week off or 2 weeks off the army, because the country know that it's going to be a lot of casualties.
Yeah.
And I donate 1 pint of blood, and I took all my family and we went to the north of Iraq, and we stayed there, and the war started that night, the night we left.
So the war started and everything changed for you, your people, your country, and yes, as we know, to this very day, it's been chaotic ever since.
That's right.
But where does a lady called Kay come into your life? How does a Kerry woman come into your life in the middle of all of that?
In 1990, my mother was, she got a very bad stroke, and she was in Iraqi hospital for a while. And we were told there's no hope. She's like just, you know, time, and she's dying.
Okay.
And we kept her in the Iraqi hospital. But then she got a few infections and a few different things. And we decided then to move her to this. We have an Irish hospital called Park.
Yeah.
Which run by all Irish nurses, medical, everything was Irish. But we have to get permission from Saddam Hussein himself, because that was is like the last chance hospital. Like if you have no treatment in other hospitals, that's your last chance.
Yeah.
And you have to get permission, which I got because I was in the army. And we moved my mother, and we were happy because it was so clean and the nurses were so care.
Good.
And then my wife was always beside, you know, in her bedside, and then we started kind of, she was telling me the truth about my mother, because we were hope that she will come back and, you know, she get over it. But she told me, no, that's not going to happen.
It was an honest Kerry woman telling you that.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And the way kind of my wife was going around, I was watching her looking after the patients.
Yeah.
She was the most caring person. That's why it just attracted me, you know.
Yeah.
And
so how do you go from the nurse looking after you and your family to the woman that you fancy and ultimately ask out on a date, I suppose?
And then someday I came in and visited my mother, and I was in my uniform.
Yeah.
And Kay was saying, my wife was saying that time, when she saw me in the uniform, she just felt so sad because she was afraid. Like she had a hope maybe when I was kind of civilian, but when she saw me in the army, she kind of get a bit of setback, small bit, you know.
Did she feel that this guy isn't going to make it?
No.
Is that it?
It was very dangerous that time.
Yeah, of course.
To speak to somebody in the army, you know. And as the army person, I was afraid to speak to foreigners, because in case you give them details of the country was in war with Iran for 8 years, and then it was American wars coming. Anyway, and then Iraq invaded Kuwait on the 2nd of August.
Yeah.
And then we kind of lost. Then my mother died. In between, my mother passed away in May.
Yes.
And my wife was on holidays to Ireland for 2 weeks. And then when she came back, she rang and said, how is my mother? Because at that time, we have taken my mother home.
Yes.
And I said to her, my mother's passed away. And she was sorry about that. And she came into the house to visit with her friend. And I still remember she brought a bottle of champagne with a black bag around it. You know, and I thought that was a bit, you know, very thoughtful, you know. It was new for me to see, like, somebody bringing something to the house.
Yes.
And after that, we started going out since, you know, we started seeing each other. And my friend, he used to have a house just near where is the the apartment block of the nurses.
Yes.
And we could meet in that house, no problem.
So was it illegal for an Iraqi soldier to be dating, let alone being seen with a foreigner or an Irish woman or a nurse? Or what was the protocol?
It was not allowed at all.
Not
allowed at all, no.
Okay, so how did you overcome that?
I was just meeting at the house for a while, and then
it's like a safe
on
house.
The phone, yeah, safe house, and then we used to contact each other, and then something happened, and I think the army heard that I was going out with Irish nurse, and I would put a prison for a few weeks.
Were you?
I was, and then the last day I knew that at that time they were allowed to leave the country.
Yeah,
the nurses, and then I had to when I just arrived home, my sister told me that. Kay was ringing me all the time.
Yeah.
And she's gone. And I just took the phone call, and she was just taking the bags out of her apartment to go to the airport.
Yeah.
And we promised each other that we'll go and to wait for each other. And no matter how long it takes, we'll wait for each other.
Had Kay at any point been part of that group of nurses who were held hostage in Baghdad?
They were, yeah, she was one of them.
How long was she held for?
She was... about 2 or 3 months.
Okay, that's a long time when you think of it. Yeah, I remember at the time, but I didn't realize it was that long. Yeah. So she got released ultimately, and she went home to Kerry.
Because she was lucky because her contract was over.
Okay.
But some nurses, they have no contract wasn't over. They stayed maybe the year after that.
Yeah, as well. Okay, but she got back to Kerry. And was she in a position to keep in touch with you? No mobile phones, no internet,
nothing,
no Twitter,
nothing,
no text.
Nothing.
So how did you stay in touch from war-torn, if you like, Baghdad and beautiful Kerry?
Yeah, we lost contact each other, and then we have no contact. Then I had to get out to Jordan when the war finished in 1991,
yeah.
About September. I just went quick to Jordan to see if she's still waiting for me, because I said there's no contact. My letters came back. She sent me a letter. It went back to her. And then I went to Jordan, and I said, before I sell the house, sell my car, get out of the country, I have to see if she's still waiting for me. And I rang that, went to Jordan, first phone I got, I rang Kay, and she said to me, "Oh my God, you're still alive." I said,
"Oh, beautiful."
And she said, "I'm still waiting," and she was crying and shouting, and you know what she's talking about. And then I said to her, "When are you coming back? When are you coming to Ireland?" I said to her, "First I have to go back and sell the house." "You are going, not, you're joking me." I said, "I am, I have to go back because I didn't know you're still waiting for me." And when I went back then, and I came back then 2 months later and sold everything and came to Ireland.
And you were able to leave the army without any problem?
In September, we let go because I was engineer in the army.
Okay.
And we have to serve 3 years in the army.
Okay, it's part of
but
the
because
national
of
service.
Invading Kuwait then, that was caused the trouble. Like, then we have to stay another 2 years. But then when the war finished in September, we all let go.
You were out. Yeah. So you hopped on a plane and came to Kerry.
Yes.
So here you were. In what part of Kerry? Are you Dingle? Or
I live in Tralee.
In Tralee.
But I have business in Listowel.
In Listowel. So when you got here, what a different world. I mean, a totally different planet for you.
It is, yeah.
How was it? When you know that when you get off the plane, you probably got the cold wind in your face and you thought, where am I?
That's right. I arrived to Dublin and... my wife, she had that time she was working at the Mater Hospital.
Okay, in Dublin, yeah.
And she was renting a house, and I got a room there. And the first thing struck me, I opened the door of the wardrobe, and I see the moulds in it. And I
welcome
said,
to Ireland.
Oh my God.
You've just come from a war zone, and now you're looking
that's
at a
right,
mouldy
yeah.
covered.
Yeah, and like in my country, it's dry,
it's
so hot.
Of course it is, yeah.
And then that's the first thing. And then the smell of the moss, Dublin carpet and all that. Yeah, and then after that, when I arrived to Kerry, where Kay's parents live here in Ballybunion, between Ballybunion, called Ballydinhu.
Did you have to do a bit of work to make them love you? I mean, most Irish parents are a little bit standoffish anyway, regardless of where someone's from. But if it's somebody from Iraq and it's 1991/2, it's all very unusual for everyone.
That's right. When I came first, it was I felt that reject because. Before I came to Ireland, I felt how they're going to accept somebody from Iraq.
Mm.
And then after a war, and then towards that time, movie in the cinema at that time, it was All of My Daughter or something.
Not Without My Daughter.
Yes, and when the Iranian guy took back his daughter back to Iran.
So you were really bad news then.
I was very bad, in the bad books first.
Okay.
But Kay's mother, my mother-in-law, she's the boss,
Right.
She said,
okay.
She said when she looked in my eyes first minute,
she knew.
She liked me.
I can believe that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what she, thank you.
No, but you've got a lovely demeanor. I can see why they said that to you. And did you have trouble fitting into the Kerry world, or was it
No, I was in, we bought a house between Aberfeely and Castledine, a place called Fieldsbridge.
Okay.
And we bought a house like a corner shop with it, you know.
Yeah.
And I started there, and everyone welcomed me, and
did
I
they?
Was shocked, you know, how people are nice there, and you yeah. know.
And you have a family now, of course, as well as Kay. Have you? How many kids have you got?
I have a daughter called Rosa, and a Peter, my son. He's just after finishing leaving cert.
Good. And Rosa, what's she up to?
She does. She's loved theatres and music theatres. She was in Guildford for a year in Surrey, and she's looking for a place now. She's a lovely voice, and she loves opera. She loves stage.
Beautiful.
Stage.
Okay, so
and she does a primary school teaching, preschool teaching in Cork now. She's after finishing first year. She won't like it. She'll go back to.
She wants to sing and
dance. She applied in Glasgow now, and she hopes she gets a place in Glasgow for theatres. You know.
Well, good luck to her with that. Let's talk about Iraq for a moment, if you don't mind, because you know it's in the news so much. But briefly, reflecting on what's happened there in Namur, particularly the Saddam Hussein. You met Saddam Hussein.
I met him.
How many times did you meet him?
About 3-4 times. Met him.
How would you describe him on a one-on-one, looking him in the eye?
Yeah. Before invasion Kuwait. Like, he was a hero of the country. Inside policy, he was perfect. But outside policy, like the foreign policy is, like moving to Kuwait was the biggest error. And everyone, like a child in the street, know that he made a big mess, you know. Going to a country would, you know, make the mess there just because of, you know, some stupid mistake he made, you know. Mm.
He was a hero to a lot of people, but the Kurds would say he wasn't our hero, you know, I suppose.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, he was a divisive figure, to say the least. Yeah.
You see, Iraq have a lot of segments, a lot of religions.
Of course, yeah.
Like, it's the biggest country in the world, have big variations.
And is that the problem? I mean, the West come along and say, we need to give democracy to these countries. And they're saying, we don't do democracy. It's a totally different concept for us politically. We're not the same.
Exactly.
And is that, would you agree with that concept? Why is that? What do they, do the countries in the Middle East, let's just talk about Iraq, do you feel they need the strong hand of a dictator?
Exactly.
Really?
You see, Iraq
is it not
now,
very oppressive, though?
It is. See, Iraq now. It won't happen. It would never solve this problem unless they get somebody like Saddam Hussein to control it. You know, you have to get somebody, because whoever going to get in, he have to get people to love him first, which is, we have about 20 different segment of religions and stuff. First, they have to accept him, and he have to be neutral with everyone.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
But a dictator, a la Saddam Hussein, can be, you might say that he knows how to run the country, but he'll also make people, there'll be torture chambers, there will be oppression, there'll be whole-scale slaughter, chemical weapons. So dictatorship is a very difficult thing to promote or to...
For Middle East, yes. In my book, yes.
Yeah, but yet you're saying that Iraq needs...
a dictator.
Is it a strong leader or a dictator?
It's both, but you know why? Because you have the Shiite Muslim, it's 70% of Iraq.
Yeah.
You have the Sunnis, it's 25%. Now, if they get somebody from Sunnis, Shiite's going to be not happy.
Right. And the other way around?
The other way around. And then you have to have somebody to say, look, this is my line.
Yeah.
Cross it, you're finished.
Okay, so when you see the current fella in charge, Maliki, and everyone in the West having supported him for a while, and now saying, oh no, he's no good, get rid of him. And then you have ISIS coming down the tracks.
Exactly.
And they're causing chaos everywhere they go. The place there's even talk of this caliphate and redrawing the boundaries, the borders, to the point that they're thinking of going back to, they're bringing it back to the pre-colonial days. In other words, back to where it belonged.
Exactly. But it won't happen. Because Maliki, you see, is back in Iran 100%. Iran-Iraq war, million Iraqis killed in that war. Now, a lot of Iraqis, they don't want Iran to be involved in Iraq. Maliki is following Iran every footstep.
Yeah.
And that's why people don't like him. This is uprise. It's not only ISIS. ISIS is only helping the Sunnis to get, and like Saddam's people now is fighting as well, his party and his the army we have is support ISIS,
the old Baathists.
But at the moment is a big rise in Iraq. It's like what happened in Egypt and Libya and all, but they are blaming the ISIS. ISIS is only, they are using them to help them. I know ISIS policy is all different,
extreme,
jihad and all that
extreme,
but it would never as soon as they get rid of the Maliki, the ISIS, they won't accept ISIS as it begun.
Yeah, and that will
be other civil war.
Is it very sad for you watching? I mean, you're sitting in Kerry, you're living here now, to watch your country being torn apart on the news every night. Does it upset you?
100%. Like, I have two sisters there. One left to Syria that time. She left the airport. She was working in the airport, and she was working with the American troop that time.
Yeah.
And then they employed a new girl to be her boss.
Yeah.
And she asked her to cover the hair, which she never did for 30 years. And then she started kind of telling her, you can't come to work without it. And then she was afraid. She left the country. She went to Syria.
And gone.
Yeah. Now she's in Lebanon.
Yeah.
And then the other sister, now she's in Turkey, thank God. She left just 2 days ago.
Okay. So your life in Kerry, so far removed from the situation we've been talking about in Iraq, are you happy here?
Well, of course, yeah, very happy.
You're happy with your family and the way it's gone. And this scrapbook that you showed me here, the letter that you wrote on the 8th of August 1990, just after the invasion of Kuwait, to your wife. And again, the photos that you have here from the newspapers down through them of Kay's escape from Iraq and letters sent back to you by the Iraqi administration. Yes, saying, no, you're not allowed to send these letters. It's a war zone story and a love story. Amazing. I mean, it's a movie sitting here in this scrapbook and a story to be told. I'd love to share it with everyone at home.
I'll show you that.
Maybe somebody will have sense to do that. Happy with a nappy. Dad to be Namir is our top hubby. So you won an award there. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Here you are in life. It's free. And the whole lot. You really made it then, didn't you? But listen, it's been lovely to meet you, Namir. And thank you for coming to say. I'm going to say, you are Namir. That's how you pronounce your name.
That's right, yeah.
Namir Karim.
Yeah. Karim.
Not Kareem. Namir Karim. It's been lovely to talk to you. Is Kay with you today, by the way?
She's
here outside. Okay, look forward to being here as well. Thanks for your time and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
All right, so that's Namir joining us live in the chip van here in Dingle this morning. It's at 19 minutes to 11. What a story that was. 51552 is the text number. We'll take some music.